Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I wish that all of you could be in studio with us. John Katz, who I've interviewed for many, many years, is with us in our downtown Milwaukee studio today to talk about his new book. It's a difficult subject. I'm glad that he has written the book because his life was transformed by his dog, Orson. I mean, not just transformed. We're talking really transformed. He bought a farm, Bedlam Farm. He has written for many years about animals that we've all come to know, and we've seen their pictures. And unfortunately, Lexi, hi. We have a dog in the studio too. Unfortunately, our dogs die. We all die, and so it's hard. It's a really hard thing to go through, and probably harder for us now than it used to be because of the place that dogs and cats are finding in our lives. So John has written a book that will help many of us. It's work of poetry, as all his work is. It's Going Home, Finding Peace When Pets Die. John has written, he's written so much, 20 books, and I know that many of you have read many of them. Soul of a Dog, Izzy and Lenore, Dog Days, A Good Dog, The Dogs of Bedlam Farm. John has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Slate, Rolling Stone, Wired, and the AKC Gazette. He's worked for CBS News, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, and the Philadelphia Inquirer. And he's also a photographer and the author of a children's book, which we will talk about. He's in our downtown studios in Milwaukee. John, what a pleasure to finally meet you.
I know. I feel like I've met you. I feel like I know you very well, and we've talked quite a bit.
We have talked quite a bit. I feel like I know you pretty well, too.
I'm not as cute as Lexi, though, am I?
Oh, Lexi is so cute. We have a puppy with us in the studio, too. Her name is Lexi. She's a four-month-old beagle, and we've put her picture on our Facebook page. So, she's darling. I just wish I had 100 dogs. Ann Reed, executive director of the Wisconsin Humane Society, is also with us. They're having a special event tonight at the Humane Society. John is speaking, and we thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for bringing Lexi into our studio as well.
I'm really glad to be here, Kathleen.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we have to start with Orson. And you write very movingly about the death of Orson, and Orson brought you to a whole new life. And it's amazing to think a dog can do that, but I know a dog can do that. And you got a farm because of Orson, and you had to bury Orson. And you write about that. So let's start with Orson.
Orson is a good place to start. You know, I always like to say when I talk about this, it's a sad subject, but it's not only sad. And I don't really do well at being depressed, so I'm not going to be too sad, if it's okay.
Okay, good. I won't either then.
I think, you know, it's important to talk about it, but also to acknowledge that, you know, these animals are sources of just great joy and love. Whenever I think of my dogs, I just smile. And I think it's important to remember that for me. Orson was a dog who did change my life. He was a crazy border collie. Someone sent to me, read one of my books, and she said, "This dog is crazy, but I think you're crazy, so maybe you can help him." And so we went off a great adventure together because of him and my efforts to figure him out. I ended up going to a farm in Pennsylvania, going with a trainer, sheep herding, all these things I was not really thinking about doing. I loved the farm I was on. I loved that whole process of learning about training. I just opened me up as a human being in a lot of ways and challenged me. And so I bought a farm upstate, and they made a movie out of him, out of a dog year. Jeff Bridges played me because he looks like me, as you can see.
Of course he does. And you're better looking.
Well, thank you. Not as good as Lexi, though.
That's right.
I know my place. But he was a problem dog. He was a damaged dog, and he had a lot of problems with arousal and then aggression. And he ended up attacking three people, including a child, and one of them rather seriously. So I had taken him to behaviorists and holistic practitioners and vets and the whole process, and all of them eventually agreed that we just couldn't fix him. So I had him euthanized, and I wrote a book about it, A Good Dog. It was somewhat controversial, and as many of my books have a tendency to be, I have a gift for that. I think in America, you know, we're in this culture where people are almost forgetting how to disagree in a decent way. And when they disagree with something, they have to hate it or they have to attack it. And so I feel strongly that it's important to be open and honest about these things, because otherwise they'll just never get discussed. So I feel very comfortable with that decision. I think I value, you know, human life very, very much. And having seen that kid bleeding, I just don't want to ever see that again. But he opened the door to this whole process. Of course, being on the farm, I was to encounter grieving a number of different ways, because there's really no such thing as a no-kill farm. You know, animals die. I had a chicken I started taking pictures of last week that I love this chicken. She was an unusual chicken. She followed me around, and I was projecting all kinds of stuff onto her. And then this hawk comes sailing out of the sky, and nothing left but a few feathers. So you go through that there, you know, with sheep and other animals. I had to do that with a donkey. And animals, as you said, are becoming so important to us. And so, and that's one of the reasons. Orson is one of the reasons. Look at the impact this dog had on my life. I mean, I wouldn't be here today if not for him. And so in our culture, where connection is getting increasingly difficult, animals, the role of animals in our lives is growing all the time. And so the grieving for them is growing all the time. And to the point where it's become, in some areas, it's being seen almost as a public health issue, because people are struggling with it so much and don't know what to do about it. So I got into this speaking at a vet convention, and a bunch of veterinarians said, you need to write a book about this, because we don't have anything to recommend to people. And looking into it, I saw there were really hundreds of books about pet loss, but they all had to do with the afterlife, with meeting a dog in heaven, or animals being angels, or cats being angels. And I'm not – I respect that. It's not my path particularly, but there was really no book about grieving now. And I kept thinking, wow, we've sort of skipped a phase. We've gone to heaven before we figure out how to say goodbye. So the book is a great experience for me. I talked to several hundred people, and I was astounded at the depth of grief and suffering that I ran into. And even on this book tour, I've never had a book tour where half the people I'm talking to are crying.
I know. That's why I'm asking you to write the letter, to read the letter from the dog at the end of the show, because we looked at your Facebook page yesterday, the Bedlam Farm, with the picture, and you were
the
reading
video.
All the dogs, and I'm just sobbing. I mean, I had to, my nose was stuffed up all afternoon. So I'm pretty emotional about this too. But
which is a great thing to be. You know, I think the two things I really have been seeing and talking, thinking about, are that it's okay to grieve, necessary, important, and it's also okay to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things are okay. And and I think people are just beginning to see that they can grieve openly for animals and not be diminished or ridiculed or dismissed. And that's really important. And then the other part of that has been to look at some tools that might, when they're ready, make them feel better about it.
The last time I talked with you, it was a very moving interview, and you have moved me, you should know, to when I retire from radio, to raise therapy dogs, because I was struck by what a therapy dog did for my dad, who was in a coma, and he came out of the coma and saw this dog on his shoulder and smiled, and that was the last time that he was ever conscious. And I know what it did for him at that moment and what it did for me. And to read about the dogs, and you're still doing this, the work that you're doing with hospice is so moving, John. It's so important.
Thank you.
And it gives a different view of death, too, doesn't it?
You
know about death. I mean, you don't know what it's like to die, but you know about the process of dying.
Well, it was this morning I was reading about Steve Jobs and one of his quotes when he said that, you know, death is our common destination.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that's it. And the one thing we universally share with all living things is we're going to die. And in America, nobody wants to talk about that. It's just never discussed. It's very striking in hospice. You go into these places and homes and nursing homes, and the people are just alone because nobody wants to be around them. So dying is shunned. It's really like a taboo. And in the animal world, I think it's particularly acute, because I think people don't really know. They don't really want to think about it until they're in it. And so they don't really have a chance to prepare. They don't really – I mean, I have yet to really meet a vet who talked about this voluntarily or before it happened. And very few people who even occurred to them that the animal they love so much was going to leave them, because they don't live that long. And so I think people are just have no mechanism for being prepared for this. In hospice, where I did this work with Izzy, and still do the work, this is a dog who was abandoned on a farm, lived 7 years of his life outdoors. And I took him in, and he was a crazy dog, like border collies tend to be. They're all a little crazy. And he had this great gift for going into a home and intuitively understanding what was needed of him. I think the one scene I remember very powerfully was a 7-year-old boy who was dying of brain cancer, and he was alone with his mother. And she was sitting with him day and night for months. And every time I went in there, she would say, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough. And I wanted to grab her and say, what could you possibly be doing that you're not doing? You know, but you train not to do that in hospice because it's not your job to cheer people up. Izzy just came in there and he spotted the Timmy right away and hopped up right on the bed next to him and put his head on his shoulder. And then they both went to sleep. And his mother sat down in a chair and went to sleep. And the only time she would sleep was when Izzy was with her son.
Wow. Aww.
And I would stand there in the room and just watch this incredible, not really having any understanding of what Izzy was doing. Mm. He didn't need any help from me. But you could see the power of both Timmy relaxing and his mother feeling so safe seeing the dog and her son that she would actually rest, and that was how we could help her. Mm. So that sticks in my mind as a powerful testament to the part of animals that we don't really quite understand, but that's right. Amazing.
Yeah,
they really can open you up, and they open me up quite a bit.
Yes. The other important part of the book and the important part of the hospice is I can understand why people, and I've been in this too, because I completely understand how you can become incredibly attached to an animal and have a very hard time when the animal dies. But the book also brings us to an understanding of human beings too, and that maybe we need to be a little closer to each other, you know, that we are human beings, and human beings are pretty important, too. And dogs can lead us, and I think they have in your life, to other human beings.
I'm so glad you said that. I always remember why I love talking to you so much. But the I think one of the very important I write about dogs because they tell me about people, and I'm really writing about the people. When you look at a dog, when you look at Lexi or the people in the room with Lexi, then you see more about them than you see about him. And people, dogs and animals, cats, horses. I've been signing books to rats and iguanas, ferrets. People are loving animals. I think they work best when they lead us to people. And I think one of the things I write about is perspective. That you know, I think the glorious history of these animals has always been about supporting us and protecting us and making us laugh and smile. And just look what this dog is doing here in this room.
I know.
The beagle puppy is really lighting up the whole floor. and that, I think, is very important to remember. I think when animals cause us to hate people or attack people or disconnect from people, that's really not mm-hmm. their function, I think. So it's just something to remember. I think it's something to think about. And also, I call it ethical grieving. To just keep people in perspective, you know, people are struggling now too in many, many ways.
Yes, yes.
And I think we need to remember that. Half the country doesn't have animals, doesn't really love animals. Half the country does. And so when people lose an animal, they sometimes find themselves with the half that doesn't, who are saying things like, you know, well, move on or get over mm-hmm. it, or it's just a dog or cat. And it's mm-hmm. very painful for them. At the same time, there are people who don't. And they live in the world also, and it's a very emotionally complicated subject that I think people have had absolutely no preparation at all in dealing with. So it was great for me.
Right. And for those people who do love animals and dogs and cats, John writes in the book, and this is very direct, and it says a whole lot. People who love dogs and cats should have them.
Yes,
they should have them. Right?
They should have them. And they can have them. You know, this isn't an ad for animals, but it's amazing how many people think they can't have an animal for whatever reason. You know, perhaps they just lost an animal, like one of the women in John's book, who is, I think you said she was 81 and thought, I've just lost an animal. I would love to have another one, and I can't. She ended up adopting a 14-year-old cat, and they could live out their lifespans together, these two wonderful senior creatures. It really is an amazing thing. I find when I speak in front of audiences, one exercise I'm able to do that always works is to ask people to think about an animal that they love just for a second, and then tell me whether they felt something open in their own minds, that just that second of focusing on an animal you care about has a way of opening you to that animal, to experience, to other people. It's really magical what happens when you put people and animals together.
I think we can do this with our children. I think we do this with our children, although it's a much harder thing to raise a child. But there is this very unique thing about unconditional. Oh, Lexi, honey, it's unconditional love. It is when you come home from work. There is nobody happier to see me than Murphy. He is unbelievable, and you just there you are. You feel validated. You feel happy. There is this bond there that's. It just can't be beat.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I think that's you're providing a lot of the context for grieving. You know, grieving like this was not really known in America until 20 or 30 years ago. It's really people weren't conscious of it. Dogs were at the periphery of people's lives. I remember my father, who did not walk around with a plastic bag, cleaning up a dog. And he let the dog out in the morning, and then in the evening he let the dog in, and the dog was on his own the rest of the time. Now people, the function of an animal is very different. They're in the center of our lives. They have human names. We spend a lot on their health care. There wasn't even dog food when I was a kid. It's a very fairly new thing. And people did not go to vets. And you didn't rescue a dog. You adopted a dog. So the whole emotional context was different. But the biggest context has been the disconnection in American life, the fragmentation that goes on between families breaking up, technology, the economy, politics has become a nightmare. Religion is struggling in many ways to uplift people. And we're worried about our cell phones and text messages. And coming off the farm on the book tour, I have to completely readjust myself because everybody is beaming in bad news from all over the earth every minute. And they're very stressed and uncomfortable and anxious, and plus changes in work and security. So I think what you just described it beautifully. What is a beautiful constant? You come home and there's Lexi, happy to see you. And it's unconditional, and it's uncritical, and it exists independent of anything else going on in your life. That's a very powerful thing, and it becomes more powerful against this backdrop of stress and confrontation and conflict that has almost become part of the ether of American life. So I think if you look at the two things, they converge completely over time, this growing fragmentation, lack of connection among humans, and this growing connection and love and support from animals.
Where did you get – you have to have a huge love of animals to be director of the Humane Society. Tell me about your love.
You know, it's funny. I think mine comes from the same place that most people's comes, and that's from those first experiences. My birthday present for my seventh birthday was a box that contained a kitten. And there are still pictures of little me opening the box and that look of surprise and seeing the little kitten climb out of the box. We had a dog early. Used to go catch salamanders and make little towns for them in the sandbox. And you go from there. I think for a child, there's an early sense of mastery that comes together with a love that means so much to a child. I can walk this dog by myself. I can care for this cat. I know where to find salamanders. And that's a connection that stays with you over time. I think a lot of people got it that way.
Mm. Our phone lines are all jammed. Oh, we have a ton of emails, so we'll go to our audience. And here's how you reach us. Just keep the number in your head because you can't get through at the moment. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. John Katz, our special guest in our downtown Milwaukee studios, author, writer. His latest book is an important book. It's Going Home, Finding Peace When Pets Die. I know that many of you have read his other extraordinary books. If you haven't, he's written all kinds of books about the animals on Bedlam Farm. And they're not just about animals. They're about John's evolving as well and enduring.
Surviving.
And surviving, right. So he's going to be at the Wisconsin Humane Society. Boswell Books called and said that the seats are sold out for tonight's event, but you can get your book signed and meet John. You just can't sit down, right?
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
We'll have a place for people to wait while John is speaking, and then we'll open up the book signing when once the speaking part is done.
All right.
Lexi and I will be doing juggling.
Is Lexi going to be there?
If Lexi's not adopted today, Lexi will be around. We are open for adoption starting at 10 today until 8 o'clock tonight.
There are also some people who work here who may want to look at Lexi as
I put him up
companion.
On my website. He may be gone by now.
I think you're right. I have a feeling Lexi might be gone by now, but... Oh, Lexi, you cutie. All right, I'm forgetting I'm doing
Get a grip now. Get
from.
A grip now.
We better carry on. we'll go to you in a moment. Did I get the number? 800-486-8655. Ann Reed is joining us in our studios, too, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Humane Society. And we also have Lexi with us, who's on our Facebook page and on John's Bedlam Farm page, too. So if you go to the Kathleen Dunn Show, I don't know if we're on there. I hope they took a picture of the two of you. I don't think so. Whenever I go anywhere with a dog,
people want to take pictures of the dog, and that's just fine.
I'm not competing with Lexi, I'll tell you.
I know. No, but you should. You should. So we'll get a picture of John and Ann as well. But Lexi is on the Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls, starting with Rich in Sullivan. Morning, Rich.
Good morning. I just want to read a brief quote here. It's seven sentences.
Okay.
It hangs on our wall in the house in Sullivan, Wisconsin here. We need another and a wiser and perhaps a more mystical concept of animal, remote from universal nature and living by complicated artifice. Man in civilization surveys the creature through the glass of his knowledge and sees thereby feather magnified and the whole image in distortion. We patronize them for their incompleteness, for their tragic fate of having taken form so far below ourselves, and therein we err and greatly err. For the animal shall not be measured by man. In a world older and more complete than ours, they move finished and complete, gifted with extensions of the senses we have lost, never attain, living by voices we shall never hear. They are not brethren, they are not underlings. They are other nations caught with ourselves in the net of life and time, fellow prisoners, splendor and travail of the earth. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you very, very much.
And there, Henry Beston quoted.
Is it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And you capture, it's one of the reasons you're such a beautiful writer, but you capture that underlying love and understanding of life and death and nature and animals and all of that. It's, I mean, you go beyond dogs, you're sort of, and your own struggle too, because I know you've been through hard times. And that's a good thing. You know, it goes beyond animals. Animals take us beyond animals.
I think there's a mystical, spiritual part that's beyond our knowledge. I think the Henry Beston quote speaks to that. I love his idea that we don't really have a language. We keep projecting our words into their heads all the time. But I think their language is beyond our comprehension. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to respect and remember that they're having a conversation with us and with themselves that's just simply beyond our ability to grasp.
Lexi has become very happy in the studio. Thank you, Rich. And I've met Rich's dogs, too. They're beautiful. All right, let's go to Leslie in Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Oh, I love this show.
Good. So do I. I want to just keep going on.
I just had two quick thoughts. It's so true about how people treat their animals. I knew my husband was the one just by the way their family treated their animals and the way he treated the family animal, their dogs. And he's just out. We've always had a dog, and it's always been a person. It's just a person to us. But now this time of year, with riding season, we all ride. And I swear the most honest, down-to-earth people are people that ride horses. I mean, we're not fancy, or we don't have any highfalutin anything, but everybody will just get together on a big trail ride. See, there's 100 people, and a lot of them I don't know for beans, but along and chat with them, and you know that they're your kind of people because they're so, first of all, they love their animals. They love to be outside. They're like tomboys. I've always been a tomboy, and I think they just enjoy being outside and don't have the worries that a lot of people who don't enjoy animals have.
Thank you. Can this lead to a question about donkeys?
Yes. I'm ready. I have 3 donkeys and I'm ready to go.
Horses, donkeys.
Well, I think every subset of animal lovers would say the same thing. You know, they hear the agility people say that about agility people, and the rescue people say it. And there's this idea, which I think is what you were referring to before. I think when animals work beautifully is when they bring you to people, and they do. I think if you allow them to do it, it's why I think it's so important not to use them, exploit them as a way of disliking people. You know, I often say at readings, you know, if you're going to hate people for mistreating animals, then you should love them for treating them well. And many, many people do treat animals very, very well and love them, and I think it's important to keep that feeling about it. But I think if you talk to somebody who's sheep herding or doing search and rescue or doing therapy work or at the animals at the Humane Society, they would say the same thing, that these are the people they like and trust because the animals have brought them together and among people who share a common view of the world. And I think who understand that animals are an important part of our lives, and to be disconnected from them is to be broken, I believe, in some way, as it is to be disconnected from the natural world. Part of my experience. I think to live a life without animals is unnatural and can be almost damaging to people. It doesn't mean they have to do it, but I think it's a natural way to live, and I think without it, people can really get disconnected from the natural way of the world.
And how do you get, because certainly not everybody who comes in the doors of the Humane Society has that kind of understanding about animals. There are people who come on a whim. Oh, it might be fun to have a dog. You hear, you know, horrendous stories of the number of dogs and cats who are just let loose, who people don't know how to care for, and maybe you can develop a love for an animal, but you need some information, and you need, I mean, do you give them John's book? Do you?
Because it's a good idea.
It doesn't always work.
We can work something out.
We would love to do that. Two things about that. First of all, and I think perhaps most importantly, you don't have to be able to articulate your love for animals as well as John Katz does in order to be a wonderful guardian for a companion animal. Lexi's playing tug of war over there. And in fact, I find that most people really can't speak fully, can't articulate fully why it is that they care so much. So neither we nor any other responsible rescue or shelter out there is looking for the perfect adopter. You can be a pretty good parent, a pretty good daughter, and a pretty good animal guardian, and we will be delighted to see you. On the other hand, there are people who, for various reasons, aren't ready, and we have, 20-some adoption counselor staff just at our Milwaukee shelter and more at our Ozaukee shelter trained to help people recognize that for themselves. It's not a checklist. It's not a black ball, but it's a talking through and figuring out what's right for you right now. Maybe you come in for a dog and you leave with kitten because we've talked about what walking a dog is like and what having a dog is like and so on. Oh, we've got parakeets right now that are going to be great animals for somebody who, for some reason, a cat or a dog might not be. So we can usually make the right connection, and our folks really look hard to be sure that we're guarding our animals appropriately.
Yeah. There are dogs that we have. I'm a dog person, and there was one dog I had who... she was the dog of my lifetime. She was a marvelous dog. And I could cry now when I think about her because she was just so good and guided me, as Orson did for you, through a really horrendous time in my life. And there was my dog. And I had a very, very hard time I had to put her to sleep. And I was with her when she died. And it was very peaceful for the moment. I thought, this is good. And then I just fell apart. And I was doing a talk show and I couldn't go to work. My dog. I had to put my dog to sleep. People don't quite understand that, do they?
Dog people do. But.
Yeah. But you make the point that dogs, and I think that this is true, it's part of the spiritual part of this, that they come into our lives for a reason, and we have this connection with them, and they've given us and we've given them, a good life. If we're good dog owners, we've given them a good life. And there is something to be said for the next animal. There really is. For people who love dogs and cats, as I said earlier, as you have written, they should have them.
Well, I think so. My own view, as you know, has evolved. Each dog I have, I think, has challenged me to grow as a human.
Right.
And I actually just hired an animal communicator.
Did you really?
To talk to four of the donkey and Rose, because she's struggling to herd the sheep. And 2 years ago, the idea of doing that would have just seemed absurd to me. And I was actually afraid to mention it. Everybody I mentioned it to says, well, what took you so long? We've done that years ago. So I think that I love this person, and I have great confidence and connection with her. But that's a part of the evolution. I think my own evolution with these animals is increasingly to see them as spirits that come and go. And they enter our lives. You were talking about a dog that marked a particular passage of your life, which, of course, is what gives it so much power in grieving. That this is an awful time in your life, and the dog. I have a dog like that. I have a dog, my new wife. I'm a newlywed.
I know. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. That's great.
Part of the challenge of Maria was she came with a Rottweiler Shepherd mix that had been abandoned in the Adirondack. This is my next book. And I call her Frida the Hell Dog. And she caught a deer last year. She didn't hurt it. She just kind of caught it, sat on it. And she's a lot of dog. And I knew right away that in order for Maria to come into my life, I had to figure Frida out because Frida did not care for men. We call her the dog who kept men away. But this is a dog who marks this passage of this extraordinary experience of finding love at a point in life where I had not really thought I would have it again. And as Orson marked a period of life, this enormous change, really, I wouldn't be writing about animals if not for him. You're talking about a dog that marked a difficult passage. So that's a powerful emotional connection. And often dogs do that more than people do it. And so, of course, you will cry for them. And why shouldn't you? It's a real loss. It's a real change. My own theory, though, is I think more and more, the way I see it, is they come when they're ready and they go when they're ready. And they find a way to get to you and they find a way to leave. And it's not entirely our call. You know, it's not really our decision entirely as much as we think so. And there are other animals waiting to come in and mark another passage of our life. I see it as a river, as a process. And so I don't see it as the end of something. I see it as the beginning of something, which is how it's been for me and perhaps for you, if you allow it. And I think this is where it's a choice. Grieving becomes a choice. Very important to mark the passage of loss, but also to decide how much pain you want to carry through it and when you want to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And not for me to tell anybody how to do that. But in my own case, I feel much better when I have another animal.
I do
start
too.
The process again.
I do too.
And each one, I have Lenore, the love dog. I have Frida, who brought me Maria. I have Rose, who's had four books written about her. So this is a gift that keeps on giving, I think. And I don't see the loss of a dog as the end of it. I see it as a continuation. It's another chapter.
And there are many people, you address this in the book, who hold on to their animals for a long period of time, and perhaps too long. We see dogs who are obviously in pain, who probably should go to sleep, who probably should die, and we can't do it.
No.
A lot of people can't do it.
No, well, I think the vets tell me that this is the most painful part of their practices, is seeing animals kept alive too long and suffering. And I think this also comes from the lack of thought, consideration, and conversation beforehand. You know, I think it's late in the game when you're in a vet's office and you have to make a life or death decision if you haven't thought about it or talked about it. But it's not really loving. Sometimes the most loving thing you can do is letting an animal go. And it's a tough decision, but it's important to talk about it and have some context in which you can discuss it with somebody.
Yeah. Let's go to Michael in New Berlin. Hi, Michael.
I'm almost crying here right now. Thank you both. I have two beautiful dogs, and I love them to death, and Henry is my forever dog. He's a standard poodle that just loves me. The way I deal with it is I have dealt with the deaths of people that I've loved.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, I know I'm going to lose them. I know they're not forever. And I kind of pre-prepare myself. I don't live in their death, but I know it's going to happen, and I don't avoid it. I think about it a lot. And the other approach I have is they're always going to live in my heart forever. They're always going to be there.
Oh.
And those are my comments. I got to go. Just thinking about it makes you weepy. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Henry. That's a great call, you know, and it makes me think of I love that idea of they don't have to go. I saw people who had memorial services, photo albums, digital albums, blogs for dogs, pictures of them, storybooks containing their funny and silly moments. I'll tell you one quick story. I think you'll like it. I went to a party someone had for a lab who had died, and I was a little startled. We're going to have a party. And they had a celebration. They invited all of the dog's friends, all the dog friends and people friends, and ran videos of all the disgusting things he had eaten and all the silly things he had done. And they had a blast. And they said they really wanted to celebrate his life. They didn't want to mark this happy dog's life by simply being sad. So they had a ride. They were up for 2 hours. They wanted to send him off with great joy. I love that idea. I made a note. That's what I'm going to do next time when I have a party.
Well, you were struck by that when you went to Quaker meetings when you were young,
very
right?
Much.
That they celebrate life.
I'm a careful reader. Well, that is a Quaker idea, to celebrate life rather than only mourn death.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it isn't sad, but I think it's not only sad.
Right. Yeah. I also love the idea, although we should do this more than just before a dog dies, but this idea of a perfect day. I love that description of the perfect day. Wasn't it, Anne?
It really was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that lit up the sky. Slate excerpted that. It had a million views last Friday.
No.
And I was quite shocked that idea of I had done something like that with a lab. But this is somebody who returned from Iraq, who his dog was dying, and who had a perfect day for him, steak and all the balls he wanted, walked anything he wanted to do. And it was his way of saying goodbye, and it left him on such a high note that when he thinks of the dog, he always smiles about that day, that he could give that dog such a great day. He gave him a whole sirloin steak and like 20 balls he could chase all day, and took him to his favorite park.
Took a nap together.
I think those kind of rituals are very important. And it's a process of marking the importance of it and being able to move on when you do that, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael, very much for
Thank
the call.
You.
We go to Danayu. Hi, Danayu.
Hi. I first heard of John Katz when the new work of Dogs came out, so it's really an honor to be able to ask a question of you.
Thank you.
But the more I hear, the more I'm afraid there is no answer for this question. I have a very low tolerance for animal abuse or child abuse, but I have friends and family who don't understand my real sympathetic streak for animals, and who feel that, you know, any money I give to an animal charity, anything like that, that I would do should go for children and for human charities. And I guess maybe there are just animal people and people who aren't. And it's just sometimes it's very hard to explain and to express to someone what that's about. So I wondered if you had anything.
Yes, well, I can speak to that if you twist my arm.
I
love that subject. I love what you're asking. First of all, you know, I write a lot about self-determination. You know, I'm a big Henry David Thoreau fan, and also a great fan of Hannah Arendt, a great moral philosopher, who was very helpful to me in making decisions about Orson and other animals. And the voice you have to follow is yours, and the heart you have to follow is yours. It doesn't matter what other people say. It doesn't matter what other people think. If I listened to other people, I would be, I don't know, probably have had a heart attack in Manhattan by now. No one thought I should get the farm. No one thought I should get these dogs. No one thought I should write about dogs.
I'll bet they thought you were off the wall.
They thought I was off the wall. Every single point in my life.
Right.
And I remember what I do is I look in the mirror, and if I like what I see, if I respect myself, then I do it. And I think the idea that we need other people's approval to make these choices is very crippling, especially in a culture that's increasingly, I think, run by fear. You have to have this, and you have to have that, and you have to have tests, and you have to have health care, and you have to have an IRA. If you do all those things, you know, it's your own choice, but you're often going to find that you're just simply not living your life. And so you're drawn to animals and protecting them and advocating for them, as is Ian. And it's wonderful to see people who do what they love. I mean, that's a self-determined life. I think the challenge is to not allow other people to define it for you. So it really doesn't matter what they think, and you probably should stop asking them if you want my advice.
Ian?
Well, the Wisconsin Humane Society is a nonprofit, which its mission is to save animals' lives. So I have to raise money for an animal charity, if you will, every day. And objection, the money should go to children. It should go to – there's so many places that need support right now, is something we hear all the time. Mm-hmm. Just to add on for a second to what John said, number one, I'm grateful to everybody who supports – other nonprofits that aren't ours too. If somebody is moved by giving money to education, giving money to the Heart Association, giving money to any cause, they need it, and God bless them. For me, having devoted now my own career to animal welfare, the thing that sticks in my mind is just as one of the other callers said earlier, Leslie, that you can judge a person by how they treat animals. Our communities can be judged by how they treat animals. Mm-hmm. And a community that can't treat helpless, voiceless creatures well is not a community that's where we want it to be yet. So that's what gets all of us who work at the Wisconsin Humane Society up and going to work during the day. For those who are moved to support us in our work, we're grateful. But we're not at all resentful of those who are moved to give to other causes. It's okay either way.
I think, you know, Thomas Aquinas wrote a lot about this, so did Aristotle, and he wrote, the reason to love animals is it's a measure of our own humanity. It's an expression of our own humanity. But a culture that doesn't treat animals well because they are helpless and voiceless is going to be a cold and detached culture and isn't going to treat people well either. And I think that's the way I look at it. It doesn't have to be one or the other either. You can help both. You don't have to just help one or the other.
Yeah. And what did Gandhi say? Do you know the quote by heart? I know it's in your book. It's the measure of a society.
The measure of a society.
How we treat our...
I mean, almost every great philosopher has said that.
Thanks very much for your call. Paul in Milwaukee. Oh, I got a pause here, too. Paul in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to add something to this conversation. I'm on my fifth border collie after 26 years.
Congratulations.
You know what they can be like.
Obviously. Yes, you're a patient and loving man.
What I wanted to say was that having a dog such as border collie, you know, requires a lot of walking and a lot of attention. And with that, I've learned to know my neighbors next door. And then I learned to know the park a block away and the woods three blocks away and the woods a mile away. But then I get to know myself because I am walking that dog and I'm alone and I'm thinking. And if it weren't for that dog, I wouldn't know all of those things. And I wouldn't know where I would be mentally or physically if I didn't have a dog that forced me to go out and walk him three times a day, 30 minutes at a crack. And I don't know where I'd be without that, inside and outside.
Five border collies. I'm impressed. I am impressed. I think, you know, Joseph Campbell writes about animals as being magical helpers on the journey. And that's how I see them. I think, and you're describing that, I think, really beautifully, that every dog I've had has made me a better person. And I remember a trainer yelling at me in a cornfield in Pennsylvania when I started sheep herding. He said, you know, cats, with the first of my crazy border collies, if you want to be have a better dog, you're going to have to be a better human. And that just blinded me, but it was true.
Thank you, Paul, so much for the
Thank
call.
You.
Yeah. John Katz is with us. He's going to be at the Humane Society tonight. The director of the Humane Society, Wisconsin Humane Society, is also with us. John's latest book, and if you haven't read any of the previous ones, I would recommend that you do so because he's a beautiful writer. And so he's written about, you know, all the animals on Bedlam Farm. He's also written a lot about the process that he's gone through, and it's been a struggle. I can remember interviewing John a few years ago when he sounded really terrible, and I remember interview him the subsequent year, and the change in your voice was just so dramatic because we hear, we don't see, you know, it's radio. You were just a whole different person, and you evolved to a new place, and you got help, and I thought, and look at you now, you know? Just great.
Now I'm blonde and blue-eyed.
Yeah. And young. Yeah, we're almost exactly the same age. So we've been through
it. Well, you look pretty good yourself. We'll talk later.
Yeah, okay. Going Home is his latest book, Finding Peace When Pets Die. He is going to be at the Humane Society tonight. It is a sold-out event. But if you want, there will be a lot of books there. He'll sign the books. And knowing him, he will talk to you as well. So that's that. And maybe you'll meet Lexi, or maybe Lexi will have a home.
If Lexi's not there, we'll have lots of other great
there
dogs.
There are a lot of other Lexis, yeah.
And for
those of you who love dogs and cats, you should have one. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Let's go next to Boyd. Hi, Boyd.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, this is a great show. Mr. Katz, it's a pleasure to talk with you. And hi, Lexi, if you can hear me. you know, almost 3 years ago, I suffered a very painful loss. I had an English bull who he passed on. And, you know, he was just a real lovable dog. You know, some people look at English bulls like they look at other dogs, they get intimidated by him, but he was just a gentle giant if there ever was one. And what you've been bringing up throughout the show, you know, how you treat animals tells a lot about how you are as a person. And you also mentioned about death and how...
Are you still there, Boyd?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
And, you know, you mentioned about death and how death can be, you know, is something we all have to go through. And I've known not only family members, but friends who've, you know, have lost lives, albeit unexpectedly. And my question is that, you know, when someone goes in to adopt a pet unless they know that something is going to happen to them, do they ever come upon the realization that in all likelihood they're going to outlive this pet? And are they, you know, obviously you don't want to think about that right away, but to have some awareness of that when you go into adopt a pet?
I think actually that's a great question, Boyd. I think most people are very aware of it. It is true, as you point out, if most people who adopt a companion animal will outlive that animal and will be able to give that animal their love through the entirety of the animal's life. I think it, in some ways it's that realization that keeps some people from adopting who could. You see a lot of people, especially people who are older, who say, I don't know if I will live long enough, or people who are sick, who miss the opportunity to have an animal with them because they're not sure that they have enough time in their life. When, number one, there are always senior animals in shelters who probably won't have a long lifespan themselves. And number two, it's not really that difficult to make arrangements. We've actually helped several people do it, and so have lots of others who are out there, for what would happen to your animal after you pass away. So I hate to see that actually keep people away from adopting when the end of life is one of the times when having an animal can mean the most.
Let's go to Chris on the road. Hi, Chris.
Hello?
Hey, Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
I was just calling with a story about one animal in my life that I fell in love with. She was a Siberian Husky. She's all white with one blue eye and brown eye. I got her as a puppy. And I had to move into a new house. And I was on the road out in California working for a moving company. And while I was on the road, our new landlord gave me a call and told me that he'd noticed that I had a large dog in the backyard, and told me that I had to make a decision between my family and my dog. Either I had to get rid of my dog or my family had to move out of that home. Subsequently, I was put into the position where, you know, you have the same feelings as if you were to lose the animal, because I had to make a decision that I didn't want to make and get rid of the one thing in my life that I could count on, is the way I felt. And this program just kind of reminded me of that point in time a year ago when I had to get rid of my dog.
Hmm. John.
Well, I think you're speaking about the power of loss. Ann had a great line yesterday, which I'm going to steal as I go around the country, about love is the companion of grief. You know, and if you don't even really want a pet, that you're not going to grieve and lose, you know, that we love them, and the two go hand in hand, and that's a love story. I think he's a man telling a love story about what something meant. There is, I think, loss involved in loving animals. You know, I've lost a bunch of them, and if you're going to have a life with them, I do think it's important to get set and acknowledge it. I don't know if you see that probably more than I do, Ann, but I just think it's very important, and I think the thing to remember always with me is the gifts they bring rather than simply the holes that they leave. I think that's the spiritual challenge.
Mm-hmm. Give us the information. I want, I'm trying to work out the timing on this. I wanted John to read the letter from a dog, which I couldn't do until the end of the show, because I won't be able to talk after. Maybe I'll be crying. But I wanted to make sure that, how long will it take to read it?
I think a couple of minutes.
A couple of minutes.
Time it for the video.
Okay. Tonight it's at
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Wisconsin Humane Society, 4500 West Wisconsin Avenue, 45th and Wisconsin. We are open until 8, so latecomers who won't be able to come in anyway because we're so happy to be sold out can wait in the shelter even if they don't arrive right on time.
All right. Great. And I like John. John's book is Going Home, Finding Peace When Pets Die. Thank you so much. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease, too, for getting excited about this program and meeting Lexi at the dock outside and bringing Lexi into the studio. And, you know, it was good.
Lexi's going to have his own show, I think.
So too. Lexi, I think, is going to have a home pretty soon. Mr. Katz, will you end the show for us,
yes,
please?
From one of the last chapters of the book, it's a letter, and I imagined a dog I love very much leaving me, and the letter that she would write to me. And I say that I don't generally believe in ghosts, but the spirits of my dogs who've died haunt me all the time. If our dogs could leave us with final thoughts, here's what I imagine their parting words might be. Dear friend, it is my time to say goodbye. My legs are weakening, my sight failing, smells are faint. I am wearying. My spirit is fading, and I have been called home and away from you. I wish to be strong again, to roll in gross stuff, to snatch greasy bones, to eat all of the things you hated me to eat, to have my belly scratched for all time. I am going home. I know I leave you in loneliness and pain. Although I have been called away, I leave you with the memories of our life together. I remember a cold winter's night when you sang to me in the dark as the wind howled and snow drifted outside the window. I felt your loneliness and knew my work. I never tired of watching you, of being with you while you lived your life. I sat by your side, entering in the spirit of the moment. I supported your life wherever it went, whatever you felt, whatever you did. I was your witness, your testament. By now you must know there is always a goodbye hovering in the shadow of a dog. We are never here for long or for long enough. We were never meant to share all of your life, only to mark its passages. We come and we go. We come when we are needed. We leave when it is time. Death is necessary. It defines life. I will see you again. I will watch over you. I hope in your grief and loneliness you will consider how sad it would have been had we not had this time together, not had the chance to give each other so much. I do not mourn or grieve, but I will miss standing beside you, bound together on our walk through life. Thank you. It was nothing but a gift. And finally, I ask these things of you. Remember me. Celebrate me. Grieve for me. And then when you can, let me go freely and in peace. When you are ready, do me the great honor of bringing another dog into your life so you can give and receive this gift again.
John Katz, the book is Going Home, Finding Peace When Pets Die. Thanks.